Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Oh, hi. Good morning. Come on in. You're just in time. Take a seat.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Rowe. Sir, I have a problem with my boiler.
How about some coffee? Cream, sugar?
What is the best backup generator made today?
Blueberry scone, perhaps?
When you turn on the hot water, it whistles like a train.
Get comfy, because Lou Casa, tu casa. And he's taking your questions till 10. Right here on the Mr. Fix-It Show with Lou Manfredini on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Hi, everybody. Lou Manfredini here, the Mr. Fix-It Show. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. My house today is in New York City. We came in to see Carmen, so I'm broadcasting from the WABC studios in New York, coming back to you until 10 o'clock this morning. This hour of the Mr. Fix-It Show is sponsored by Ace Hardware, by PermaSeal Basement Systems. And when you call in today, say hi to Cassara. Lindsay's taking the weekend off. She was actually supposed to be up in Green Bay at a wedding. And for those that remember, when you have little kids, both got sick and then she couldn't go.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's awful. Yeah, and so it's hopefully it'll all work out. But so she's taking the Saturday off. But say hi to Cassara when you call in this morning. Good morning, Sam. Good morning, Domati. How you guys doing today?
Good morning. I'm good. How you doing?
Hot, right? Hot there.
Way too hot. 90 degrees, Lou.
Unbelievable. We left Friday morning to come to New York, and early. We were on like a 7 a.m. flight, and it was like 78 degrees at you know, 5-something in the morning when we got in the car. Like, wow, it is so humid. It's beautiful in New York.
What's it like out there? What's the weather like there?
It's beautiful. I mean, it was in the 70s walking around, and we had a lovely day yesterday walking around New York and had a nice time. Went to see a show last night, which was a lot of fun, and then got back, as I mentioned, to watch the Cubs win. I don't know, Sam. I know that you do your best to, you know, support the Cubs, but there were a couple calls in the last couple games that went the Cubs' way, don't you think?
They've been super resilient. I'll give them that. I mean, you know,
I get it. But there was a couple calls that they went to in review that I was like, oh, no, he's out. And then like, oh, he's safe.
You're saying they went the Cubs way, not the other way?
Went the Cubs way. Hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes the breaks even out.
They do. You're right. Absolutely right. And what's the name of the manager of the Brewers?
Craig Counsell.
Who kind of looks like he's 16.
Yeah, he's very young looking.
Very young looking. And the look on the guy's face most of the time when they go to him in the dugout is the looks that it looks to me like I am in so over my head. That's what he looks like.
It looks like defeat.
Always. And I mean, they're a good team, right? I mean,
how old do you think he is, Counsell?
Oh my God. I mean, I'm sure he's older than I think. I'm going to say he's, well, did he play baseball?
He did, yeah. He was on that World Series team for the Diamondbacks in 01. You said he looked 16. How old do you think he is?
He looked 16. I bet he's 38.
47.
Really?
It's a good-looking 47.
It's a good-looking 47. I would take that 47 for sure. That's funny. That's really funny. Well, anyway, so we're here doing the show from New York, but back to you, and it's all about you people. So we want to help you with anything that we can. We got a couple of cool items. Our Noodaloo 2 is a tiny little thing that's super powerful. That's all I'm going to tell you, coming up a little bit later on this hour. And then we're going to be talking with one of my last year, I got to attend the Mecum auto auction event that's going to take place in Schaumburg this year. Once again, which is they're going to have like over 1,000 cars. It's on October 5th through the 7th at the Renaissance Schaumburg Convention Center. 1,000 American muscle cars, classic Corvettes, hot rods, restored mods, and more are going to cross the auction block. It's the 30th anniversary of Mecum Auctions that had its first auction in 1988 at the Rockford Airport. So This is awesome. If you love classic cars and you want to buy one, especially, you need to go to this thing. So we're going to be talking this morning with Dave Majors, who's the CEO of Mecum Auctions, after 8:30 this morning. I had a chance to go there last year, and you know the story is that my wife was out of town and she didn't know I was going. I did not buy a car, but I really wanted to. It is so cool, and even if you're not going to buy, you can buy a ticket to go in and look around. We'll learn a little bit more about the whole thing. It is a playground for people that love classic cars, and I could not recommend it more if you really love that. So we're going to talk with them a little bit later on this morning. But right now, let's get to your phone calls. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We've got Karen who's calling in from the Northwest Suburbs. Karen, you're on WGN. Good morning.
Hi, Lou. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure. How can I help you?
Well, you had helped me and my mom previously. My mom lives in a ranch in Skokie, and the deck she has off the kitchen is 22 by 14, 22 length by 14 feet, and it wraps around from the kitchen to the family room.
Okay.
Questions for you. Originally, it was a wood decking, and the planks went the 14 feet out from the kitchen. That's the only entrance that we use.
Okay.
And I'm wondering, should the planks run the 22-foot length? And I don't know if I said it's composite. It will not be composite flooring. Should it run the 22-foot length and have staggered seams, or should it run the 14-foot length and have full planks?
Are you reframing the whole deck?
It's going to be in the same position as it was before, and it's going to have a new foundation. But it will have
Okay, but the entire deck is coming down.
Correct.
All right, so when we're starting from scratch.
Correct.
Well, I mean, visually, you know, the solid board, I think, is a better way to go. You know, if it's going to be the same size and you've got an opportunity to just go visually with the length of the board being 14 feet with no seams whatsoever.
Correct.
I think visually that looks nicer. And quite honestly, the deck from the home, like if you're looking out the window, because the lines are heading away, it'll make the deck appear larger than it is. Although 14 feet is a pretty good size, you know, pretty good size deck. And from a framing perspective, it's just the way that they have to frame it up. They're going to run the joists, obviously, parallel with the house so that they can put the decking boards perpendicular to the home. Okay. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? How high is the deck from the ground?
It's low, but it's a little raised, maybe a foot.
Okay.
Because of there's a difference between the ground floor, the ground, and then when you come out at the sliding glass door.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so are you going to put some type of rail on?
There will be a rail around. There's a grill at one corner.
Yeah.
So there will be rail there, and there will be benches.
Nice.
On the for the rest of it.
I think that I would do the solid boards with the composite material. If that's what you're going to use, going to look just fine. You'll have less opportunity for things to separate, I think you'll have a much cleaner look if you did that. So just go, you know, kind of similar to what you have now. If you're not changing the overall style of the home, and go with that, and I think you'll be fine. I appreciate the phone call. Welcome back. Lou Manfredini here, the Mr. Fix-It Show, coming to you live from New York City. New York City! Yeah, we're here visiting our daughter Carmen for the weekend. The folks here at WABC were kind enough to find a little spot for me to host the show back to Chicago. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. You've got questions. I can hopefully help you. Let's talk with Barb, who is in Elgin. Barb, you're on WGN. Good morning.
Good morning, Lou. I have a problem. Last winter, I noticed when the other cast iron radiators in the house were either warm or hot, the one in a small bathroom was ice cold. But I sort of ignored it, and I thought, well, it'll get better.
Right. Barb? It's usually true that when you just ignore problems, they just get better.
Well, that's right. It didn't work this time.
I know.
I tried putting on the heat a short while ago, and the same thing happened. That radiator is ice cold. I felt the bottom of the valve for that mm-hmm, one, mm-hmm. and it's warm.
Okay.
And it's been bled and bled and bled. And nothing, there's no problem, but the water that comes out, of course, it's just cold when water comes out.
Okay.
I let a little come out.
Are these traditional radiators, like stand-up radiators in a corner somewhere?
Or are they're along the baseboard. They're about maybe 8-10 inches high and about 2 inches wide.
Are they, I'm just trying to picture them, are they metal fin tube or are they cast iron?
They're cast iron.
Okay. And, I mean, now it's, 90 degrees today, but who bled the radiators? You?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Here's what I want you to try one more time before you call somebody. You're going to go fire up the boiler and turn the thermostat up to, today you'd have to get it up high, but, 80 degrees, so we get some flow going. And on that cast iron, you do have a valve, right, that you can turn on and off?
Right.
And are you able to turn it on and off?
Easily, yeah.
Okay. So I want you, with the boiler running and the pump circulating the water, I want you to articulate that valve, turn it off, wait a few seconds, turn it back on, wait a few seconds, like 30 seconds, to try and see if there's any debris in that valve that could be causing the water not to flow. So you're going to do that a few times. Then I want you to go to that bleeder, which is a little difficult because it's a baseboard, with some kind of bowl or pot, whatever you may have, and hold it underneath there and bleed that thing until you get warm water.
Wow.
Okay?
I've never done that. I've never tried that.
Yeah, well, we need to get warm water out of that thing because there could be some bigger airlock inside there. If you let that bleeder run, so when you've confirmed that, in fact, it's hot, like the other radiators are warm, like, okay, everything's warm now, because the boiler's going to keep adding more water. It's got a, self-filler on that. You're going to go to that bleeder and, set up a nice pot and some way to get the water into it and just keep it running until you feel warm water. And then once you do and it stops spitting and whatever, you turn it off and you should be okay. If that never happens, then you're going to need a boiler company to come out and take a look. Do you get that thing serviced on a regular basis?
Not every year because it's been such a good boiler.
Yeah, well, yeah. I know. I'm sure it's a good boiler, but it needs a little TLC.
Yeah, the burners were cleaned last year.
Okay. All right. Try all this, and if that does not work, then you have to get somebody to come out and really take a look at it because there could be some kind of clog of some sediment or something that's inside there that they may need to take it apart to flush the whole system out for you. The fact that it's just one radiator, tends for me to think that it's just localized to that one area right there, and you should be able to fix this with that repair that I mentioned. I appreciate the phone call. Thank you so much.
A hustle here and a hustle there. New York City is the place where they said, hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey, Joe, take a walk on the wild side.
And the pretty girls say, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Hi, everybody. Lou Manfredini here with you, the Mr. Fix-It Show. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Our good friend Lyle Dean. Hey, Fergie, you got a second to pull together my rim shot? Can you get a rim shot? My good friend Lyle Dean. Remember Lyle Dean? I'm Lyle Dean. Lyle sent me a little note that really kind of fits nicely. Top 10 things that you learn as you get older. right? You get older, things that bothered you once before maybe didn't bother you so much, but you learn to deal with all this stuff. And I thought that I would share that with many of you this morning because I think some of you can relate. Number one is I talk to myself because sometimes I need expert advice. Ba-dum-bum. Timing is everything. Sometimes I roll my eyes out loud. I don't need anger management. I need people to stop making me angry. My people skills are just fine. It's my tolerance for idiots that needs work. The biggest lie I tell myself is, I don't need to write that down. I'm going to remember it. A little too fast, I think. When I was a child, I thought that nap time was a punishment. Now, it's like a mini vacation. Very nice. I'm not going to go all the way to 10. Finally, number 10, this is the last one. Getting lucky means walking into a room and remembering why I'm there. Those are the things that Lyle and I have learned as we've gotten older, and so I'm sure that many of you can relate to that this morning. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Let's go back to the phone lines. This, I believe, is Alga calling in. Alga, you're on WGN. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, and thanks for taking my call, Lou.
Sure.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. Anyway, this is my problem. I own my own bungalow. It's 112.
Wow.
A chimney problem. And because I couldn't do the chimney with all the estimates and roofing, which is under insurance, trying to see if I can get help. So the problem that exists now after I have had the old furnace and a water heater taken out to do direct vent power venting.
Okay.
Put in 2 weeks ago, the man came and did the work. Anyway, after the rain we had, the first heavy rain last Tuesday morning, I get up at 3, so I was up checking because my water heater is like a little too hot. And I heard rain coming down the flue of which that area where the old pipe furnace went into. And I don't know how to determine. I've had a company from just listening to me say they would come out for quite a bit of money and cap the recap with aluminum the top and seal. And I said, well, what about the flashing? And then he says, what a roofer. I said, well, the roofer, I'm in litigation trying to get a whole, you know, trying to get insurance, you know, taken care of. So they left me with two options, tear down the chimney, no price yet, or let them put the aluminum on top, take the little flue part out, and the capstone, not re-put a new one, just to cover it with the aluminum. I don't know where the leak is coming from. And it doesn't seem like they want to do both. So how do I...
So your chimney now is not being used for any mechanical purpose?
No. The new American Standard furnace high efficiency was installed with a Rheem 40-gallon direct vent a water heater out the sides of the building. There are two vents, PVCs for the furnace, but he only said the water heater needed one.
Right.
So he just has one going out the side. As long as it's 3 feet away from doors and windows and above ground,
Yeah. Yeah, you're fine. Okay, that's fine. Okay, so this, you have no fireplace or anything like that?
No.
All right, and
empty.
Have you talked to the Lindemann chimney people?
Sir,
and
I want to go there.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I mean, they would be the ones. That would be the one-stop shop for all of this.
Okay.
Is
let
it,
me ask
it,
you this.
Is there? Is have you had work from them, or you didn't like their estimate? What was it?
I'm waiting for that.
Okay.
It's, you know, but I don't understand why. I mean, you know, can you get me, you know, from your experience with this, what's the best way to do? Tear down the chimney?
No.
Recap it?
No. I mean, okay. So the thing is that the chimney, the brick chimney that you have, is part of the overall look of the home. If you tear down...
it's cinder block now because it was rebuilt maybe 25 years ago. And all the roofing estimators I had and chimney guys, I can't afford to rebuild the chimney or even to do the parging there, that the effervescence is already going north and south, mm-hmm. not only on the brick, slats on the outside that go down. It's like I don't know what to do. Why?
Okay, hold on. Let me help you and just listen to what I have to say.
Okay, look.
If you tear down the chimney, that's a huge expense, and you not only have to tear the chimney down, but then you have to rework the roof and the soffit and the fascia. We're talking about a huge investment to kind of change the whole look of the house by taking this down. Now, by doing that, you'll never have a chimney problem whatsoever. But if it were me, short term, and not even short term, but from a long term solution was, they could put some type of aluminum cap over the top of the existing chimney, and by doing that, whether it's aluminum or steel or covered tin, whatever it may be, that is going to help to slow down any problem that you may have with efflorescence coming through that chimney as well. Now, it all has to be inspected properly to be repaired, but if it were my money, I'd put the cap on and not tear the chimney down.
Okay, and when they do give estimates, I mean, because this is the highest chimney on, like, the block and in the blocks that are around me.
Right.
I've been getting words like, well, we have to build a special scaffolding, and that's why it costs so much money.
Well, we have to go
all the way to the top to saw
right.
off.
Right. I mean, all of that is true. Now, with a cap, if they're just going to put the cap on there.
No, they're not. They were just, what was being talked about was cover it with aluminum.
Right. But if they're going to put an aluminum cover on the top, I don't necessarily think that they would need to build a scaffolding. I haven't seen the home, but if they were going to do all kinds of tuck pointing and rebuilding or tearing down, then that would require scaffolding, and that's where a lot of the money is. And there's labor involved in doing all that work, and so while you're looking at, oh, it's just a chimney, I got a cap, but we got to get workers up there safely, and because of rules and how it all works, and companies that are legitimate, they don't want to get their people injured, so they'll build the scaffolding, which costs a lot of money. I would call several different companies to give you estimates. Now, we've got, Rogers Roofing, Lindholm Roofing, the guys at Lindeman Chimney. Those are three very valuable sources that you can talk to. And at least you'll get three bids from reputable companies that will help you make a decision on how to spend your money properly. If you have, you obviously have to have this work done, but you just want to make sure that you're ever doing it, knows what they're doing. And between those three, they're going to know what they're doing and be able to get it done right. All right, it's time for our New to Lou 2. This New to Lou 2 is, how do I tell you about this so that I'm not giving it away? It's tiny, it's strong, and it's super useful. That's what it is. Take a listen.
Oh, Hercules, Hercules, Hercules,
work,
Hercules.
Work.
Smaller than a quarter, but strong enough to carry 4 pounds. Magnet Pal, our New to Lou 2 this week, is a little magnetic keychain that can perform Herculean feats for its size. Magnet Pal is made in the USA from neodymium rare earth metals, then compacted and coated with rust-proof plastic. It can organize nuts and bolts, track paper clips, find studs.
How you doing?
And help you hang, corral, or hide your keys. Instead of slipping a spare set of keys under the mat, now you can try all sorts of new magnetic hiding spots, like under the gutter. And if you need a handy helper, a Magnet Pal can attach to your hand tools to hold bits or give your tool belt a magnetic pocket. It's a small, tiny addition that does a lot of heavy and helpful lifting. One Magnet Pal goes for $12.95 or a 3-pack for $34.95. You can find them online at the Grommet, Amazon, or MagnetPal.com. I'll put all this information up on Lou's Facebook page. That's this week's New to Lou 2.
I love this thing. It is a tiny little super strong magnet. I mentioned to you that I'm in New York. We came to visit Carmen. It's her last semester in college, and she's in a dorm for just this semester, and there's four people living in the room, and the rooms are tiny, and there's like no personal space, you know, which she's like, fine, I can deal with this. And when she was in the dorm a couple of years ago, we had turned the desks a certain way, but her roommate doesn't want to do that. And there's a table, and when she's lying in bed, one of her other roommates is just sitting there eating cornflakes, watching her sleep, which drives her crazy. So I was in the place yesterday, and I'm going, well, you could just put like a little curtain up here, like a little curtain, and it would be fine. She goes, well, what would I attach it to? Because the ceilings are concrete. Well, they have a piece of wire mold that goes to the smoke detector, and the wire mold is screwed into the concrete ceiling, made of metal. And I said, I got this little magnet that is like super strong that you could put a ring on, and you could hang a curtain from it over to your desk and do it. She's like, really? That would work? I'm like, uh-huh. This thing's awesome. Hide keys, as Lindsay mentioned, and because it's that super strong magnet, it actually sticks to stainless steel, which makes no sense, but it does. Not a super strong grip, but because stainless steel is non-ferrous, but it will stick to stainless. But on a real piece of metal, like on a, you know, a nice big hunk of metal, it is amazing how strong this tiny little magnet is. It really is something else. So check it out. Lindsay will post that up on our Facebook page. You can learn more about it as well. And John Williams, who's coming up later on this morning, I'm dying to talk about Battle of the Sexes because Mary Beth and I went to go see it on Friday. It's an awesome movie. And but I'm going to leave it to John because he'll hopefully watched it and will give you a great review. But it definitely needed to put that on your list. All right, 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Do we want to? Yeah, we probably want to take a call right before we have to take a break. Let's see who's hanging on the line. We got Tom who's in Chicago. Tom, you're on WGN. Good morning.
Morning, Lou. Let me take you off speakerphone.
Oh, thank you.
90-year-old house, hot water heater, type heat, and what's a good boiler? I think my man's boiler is gone.
Is done?
There's, yeah.
All right, there's a bunch of really good boilers. It's really more about who puts it in that matters. Some of the names would be...
That would be a second question.
Right, Weil McLean, Burnham... is a long-standing name in the boiler business. There's a company called Buderus that makes a very good boiler. All three of those are great. Where does your mother live?
Far northwest side of the city, Dunning area.
Okay. So a couple. I'm going to give you three sources. Okay. One is iwantsmart.com. Okay. They're an organization of a good group of HVAC contractors. So iwantsmart.com, Dykstra Home Solutions, and the third one is American Weathermakers. And so you can get three bids. You can decide who you want to work with. They're all very accomplished contractors and, have a lot of experience in, you know, hydronics. And they should do a nice job for you.
Okay, well, what was the first brand you mentioned? There was Burnham and Buderus.
Weil McLean. Two words, Weil McLean. Remember the guy up in Libertyville? I'm Irvin Weil. Your new Cadillac you're going to buy from me. Well, he has no connection to the boiler company, but that's how you spell it.
And then iwantsmart.com.
iwantsmart.com. Dykstra Home Solutions, and American Weathermakers.
All right, Lou, thanks a lot.
You got it. Have a great day. I appreciate you calling this morning. It is, what time is it here? We got time. We got time to take more calls. That's good. All right, let's talk to, it was Tom. How about Marty, who's calling in? Marty, you're on WGN. Good morning.
Good morning, Lou. How are you today?
I'm good. What's going on?
Excellent. I'm looking to replace 35-year-old wood double-hung windows.
Okay.
I brought in Gilkey for a quote. Years ago, you also used to talk about siding one windows one.
Correct.
I had them come in, and they recommended the 8000 series vinyl windows from Climate Solutions in Franklin Park. I hadn't heard of them, so I was wondering if you had an opinion about siding one today as well as this window series.
Well, you know, siding one is the guy that founded that company. He was a very good friend of mine, Bill Conforti, but he no longer owns that company. So, you know, it's under new ownership, and I got to be quite honest with you. I don't know what kind of windows they're using, or nor, you know, do I have a relationship with them as far as, you know, the kinds of stuff that they're putting out there. So I can't, of the current iteration of the company, I can't really give you an opinion either way, you know, as to what they're doing. The thing I will tell you is, while, you know, you can buy good vinyl windows in this marketplace that'll hold up well, and, you know, Gilkey, obviously, you know, I'm in the working with them promoting their windows right now.
Right.
But the composite window technology that's out there now is really my preferred thing, because I think for our climate and the constant, you know, change, and, you know, look at it, it's 90-some degrees today, it's going to be. It's September, and then, you know, in just a few weeks, it's going to be freezing cold again. And that constant expansion and contraction is what really puts vinyl to the test. It's not that it can't do it, but the composite product is a much better product, in my opinion. And so if the budget can allow it, that'd be what I would do.
Very good. Thank you. And I do value your opinion. So, again, thank you so very much.
You got it. I appreciate you calling this morning.
I like to move it. You like to move it.
Lou Manfredini has that great Saturday morning show, Mr. Fix-It, on WGN Radio.
Hey, Lou, I promise I'm going to listen to your advice. Say that aloud. Put your hand up. Put your hand, right hand up.
Love me some Lou, huh?
To me, you're my friend now.
And here he is. This is the place for the helpful Mr. Fix-It man.
Don't touch me, because I'm close to the edge.
I like to move it.
Welcome back to the Mr. Fix-It Show. This hour of our show is sponsored by Fox Home Center and by ChevyDriveChicago.com. I was getting on the airplane coming to New York on Friday, and I always say good morning to the flight attendants. You know, it was early in the morning. Hi, good morning. And as I turn around, walk away, the guy goes, should I tell the guy that I shop at Menards? I said, you, sir, I don't want you bringing me a cup of coffee this morning. And he starts laughing. And then he came to apologize. I was just joking. I do shop at Ace all the time. So it was kind of nice. Domity, are you a moviegoer?
I do like going to the movies. Yes. I don't get to go as often as I would like, though.
Sam, are you a moviegoer?
Nah, not anymore.
No? All right. So I was talking about, I'm not going to spoil it for John, but this Battle of the Sexes thing, any of you have any interest in going to see it?
I really do want to see this. I like Steve Carell as an actor because he can do comedy and he can do some intense movies with the same talent.
Yeah.
Show Field Trip?
Let's do it.
All right.
And are you, now you two are, you know, obviously younger than me. You don't remember any of this?
No.
Nope.
I mean, it's long before your time.
Nope,
and so you don't really
Google.
You don't really know.
Alerts.
You don't know the story behind this. Right?
I know the story. I won't spoil it though for Dome and T.
Right.
I know nothing.
It was a huge, huge deal, and from a sports, you know, I mean, event, you know, I mean, it was like the McGregor Mayweather, you know, planned event sport, right? But it had lasting ramifications, in particular for women in the sport of tennis. But what is amazing to this, as two young men, when you go there to watch this, the things that were said about women on national television, just almost as if it was an aside, it almost makes you uncomfortable. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Sam, you would never say anything like this if your mother was in earshot, because you would, I don't know where you'd be sleeping that night, because it wouldn't be at home. It's unbelievable.
House, yeah. Probably in the doghouse.
Oh, my gosh. And you're, like, literally, I'm sitting there next to my wife going, oh, my gosh, I can't believe they said that, or things that were saying. And everybody kind of giggles and laughs about it, you know, but there's, like, this undertone. It's definitely something you got to go see.
I'm really excited about this. I don't know if you know about this, Lou, but Judy Pilak is working on a new series about the state of women in America and the feminist movement, the current feminist movement that's been
aired. I did not know that.
Yeah, it's starting on Tuesday, so it's right in tandem with the movie. Starts Tuesday through Thursday, and Amy Guth is featured on it, and some professors talking about sociology and kind of how the women's movement has evolved, especially in the Trump era versus over the past decades. And what you're talking about right now is going to be interesting.
So interesting. Yeah, I have a very good friend of ours. We have a very good friend who lives in Colorado, and she is a very successful business person and has had all these, you know, pretty substantial roles in companies in the finance world. And she just got this brand new job with a company that's based out in Colorado. And it was something like either a 6 or 8 month interview process. And there were candidates. It was like almost like a global search for someone. And of the 8 finalists for the, you know, as it came down to this job, she was the only woman.
Wow.
And she ends up getting the job, right? Now, this woman, doesn't matter that she's a woman, but she's just a really bright, smart person. And but there is this disconnect. And, you know, I have daughters. All I want them to be is successful, and I want them to have the equal shot at whatever it is. You know, it's just if you're the best at it, you should get it, but there also shouldn't be any barriers for them. And so she's really excited about this position, A, not only because she's super capable, but it's also inspiring to other women to say, hey, you can do this too, you know.
It's
so it's cool.
Stuff.
Well, I'm looking forward to that series. That's good. I like that. Thanks, Noma T. All right, 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Let's go back to your phone lines right now. We have Denise, who's hanging on in Carpentersville. Hi, Denise. You're on WGN.
Good morning, Lou. Thank you for taking my call. I listen every Saturday.
Thank you.
So here's my problem in a nutshell. My ABS shutters are starting to fall off of my house. I got my house re-sided 5 years ago, almost to the month. And, of course, you know, everything's out of warranty. But
of course.
Yeah. So
Were the shutters new then as well?
Yes. I purchased the shutters new from a home improvement store, ordered them. And the contractors also installed all of the accessories, the shutters, the lights, all of that stuff.
Okay.
So we had a big wind this past week, and my uppermost shutter was hanging horizontally, which is quite an eyesore. So I had to get a long pole and heave it down, and now I have a big...
Oh, I would have left it there. Halloween is coming up. It could have been a whole look. You could have put some cobwebs off of it. We're like, wow, look at this freaky house.
Had I not reacted so quickly.
Right.
Thank you. I should have talked to you last week.
Now you have more work to do.
Yes. So here's the advice I'm looking for from you. So I can see the spikes have literally... sheared off in half, so half of them are still embedded in the siding and half are hanging off with the remaining shutters.
What kind of siding is it?
It's vinyl. Or,
okay.
You know, I don't know if I'm using the right term, but, you know, the plastic.
It's not like a cement or a wood siding.
No.
It's a vinyl siding. And do you know when they anchored them, did they drill through the vinyl or are there little metal clips?
They drilled through the vinyl, yes. They drilled through the vinyl, and I'm sure, I believe it was the caller before me or two callers ago, you talked about the expanding and contracting, and I'm sure that's what's caused them to start falling off the house. So
that's
the advice that I'm looking for from you is when I hire a handyman to come out and re-anchor these shutters, what type of anchors should I be using, and how far would I advise them to drill in? I mean, how far do we go in?
How old is the house?
The house is 23 years old, maybe.
Yeah. You know, typically with the vinyl shutters, when you're mounting them on a vinyl home, they have like a metal clip that it's like an L bracket. And the L bracket that you mount through the siding has little slots in it, so it does allow for... In other words, you screw through the vinyl, but then the clip can move horizontally back and forth because that's the way the vinyl does stretch a little bit vertically, but mostly it goes horizontally. And then it screws to the side of the shutter, so you don't actually see any screws going through it. But you're going to fix what they have there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what I would do is, if he's going to go through existing, he's going to drill a little bit larger hole into the vinyl that's bigger than the screw, and you need to go into the framing of the you need to go into the framing of the house.
Okay.
Hopefully there's plywood there, there needs to be plywood there, because, you know, the chances of you hitting some kind of stud underneath there would be really a shot in the dark, depending on where it is, how it got on there. So hopefully they're going to be able to go through there, a little bit larger hole, a little bit of latex caulking around the hole, so when they drive the screw in there and go in there, it holds. And it seals up so there's no water that can get in there, which with the shutter over the top should be minimal. But that's just kind of an added benefit. And then as it expands and contracts, that screw should not shear at all.
Okay. So the clips that you talked about are not an option now. That should have been the first.
Well, it is. It is an option. But the problem is now you have a hole in the shutter.
Yeah.
There you could buy some little caps, but they may not match in color. So
right.
I would probably go through it again, longer screw, bigger hole on the vinyl siding to allow for some expansion and contraction, a little bit of caulking in the hole as the screw goes in.
Oh, I see what you mean about the larger hole. Okay,
right.
That makes sense to me, because then, because otherwise I would think that as the expanding and contracting, then the shutter is going to be deformed as it moves around.
I mean, it could be, you know, depending on how much weather and stuff you get. So, yeah, that kind of is a little trick of the trade. All right, and if you do that, it should stay put.
Show with Lou Manfredini. Now back to Lou on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back. The Mr. Fix-It Show with me, Lou Manfredini. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Let's go back to the phone lines now and talk to Rip, who's in Des Plaines. Rip, you're on WGN. Good morning.
Good morning, Lou. Thanks for taking my call.
How can I help you, sir?
I have to say I love the Lyle Dean Top 10. That was phenomenal.
Well, we're all getting older, Rip.
Yes, we are. Lou, my question this morning is, we contracted to have a cement driveway put in, and they're not sure if they're going to get to us late fall. And I was looking for your advice, late fall, or should we hold off and do early spring next year?
Well, we need to define what late fall is. Is late fall November?
No, they were saying maybe the end of September, which is that window is closing.
Oh,
weeks of October.
Listen, as long as we don't get a hard freeze for a couple weeks, you're fine. And actually, what I like about pouring concrete this time of year is because temperatures eventually get a little lower. The concrete slows down on its curing process, and so. I have no qualms with you doing any kind of concrete flat work, well into December even. It's not a big deal. We just need the ground not to be frozen when they do all the work. And when they pour it all, one of my kind of the tricks I tell people is that day that they're going to pour it, you're going to talk to the concrete contractor about making sure that they pour the concrete wet from the truck. All right? So, meaning that it's going to be a little bit soupier when they put it down. They're going to be able to finish it all. But the reason they don't like to do that is they're always worried about somebody stepping across it when they're done. They want it nice and firm. So you're going to take that afternoon off, and you're going to have a portable radio and a stick. And so if anybody comes near it, you hit them with the stick. And then after about an hour, after they leave, and you can kind of gently touch it, you'll see the concrete looks nice and green, but it's firm. You're going to take the hose with a little sprayer and lightly spray the concrete down, a little bit of water on the top to slow the curing down so you don't get any of these little hairline cracks at the top. Make sure they use, you know, expansion metal, inside, you know, some type of metal in there. There's even a fiber mesh that they can put in the concrete to make it, you know, kind of stay together. And then they need to come back and seal it.
Okay.
I got no problems with them doing anything in October, November, early December.
That's fantastic. I do have a hockey stick that I can bring out early.
Hockey stick's perfect. A hockey stick is perfect. They get too close, and you know what you do? You get a penalty for high sticking.
That's awesome.
All right, Rip, I appreciate the phone call. Good luck with the project.
All right, thanks. Well, you're awesome. Thank you for your help.
You got it. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Let's go down to Plainfield where Roy is standing by. Roy, you're on WGN. Good morning.
Good morning, Lou. Thank you for taking my call. I love
of course.
I listen to it every Saturday morning.
Thank you, sir. How can I help you?
Well, I live in a three-level townhouse, and my water supply is whining when I would turn some water on in the house. It'll whine for maybe 2 or 3 seconds and then seems to stop. And then when I shut the water off, several seconds later, I hear the same whining for another 2 to 3 seconds. It's not water hammer. I've drained the system 3 times in the last 2 months. I've checked water supplies and shut them off to the toilets to see if maybe it was, you know, some pressure thing doing something to the filling of the toilets. And I've also checked the PSI, and it's 50.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm perplexed. What's making the whining noise?
You're on city water, correct?
Correct.
And do you have a meter in your home?
I do.
And the water service coming into the home, tell me about the valve that's on. What kind of valve do you have before the meter? Is it a quarter turn ball valve or is it a spin valve?
It's a quarter-turn ball valve.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And you have a ball valve on the other side of the meter as well?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm going to say that the whining is coming from the... let me ask you one other thing. Does this happen all the time?
Yeah, pretty much.
And it doesn't matter what fixture you're at. You flush a toilet or you're at the kitchen sink or you're taking a shower. You get this whining. It starts, then it goes away, and then you shut the water off and it whines again.
Yeah, it primarily, Lou, when we're on the second level, we hear it. The third level, I think we're far enough away from it, we really can't tell if it's whining or not.
Yeah. I think it's your meter.
Really?
Yeah. Here's what, basically, if you're telling me that you've already drained the system down and this is a new problem.
Yes.
All right. Here's what I would try as a test. Go downstairs, where the meter is, and I want you to, the valve that's on the output of the meter. So, you know, not the water coming into the meter, but the water coming out. I want you to shut that valve off. I want you to shut that valve off 50%. And then I want you to go try the water, and I'm wanting you to reduce the volume of water that's coming out of there and see if that doesn't quiet it down. I don't know that it'll eliminate it, but I bet it's quieted down. With the thing with the sound when it comes from water and stuff is it just travels through the pipes. See what I mean? And
it's for us to find it.
Right. And so I bet it's coming from your meter. And you may need the city or the village to come out to give you a new meter.
Okay.
But try this little test that I mentioned with that valve. And you can even go more than 50%, but start at 50%. And if all of a sudden you're like, look at that, doesn't make any noise, then call the city of Plainfield and have them come out and say, I got a whiny meter, and they'll come out and swap it out for you, no problem.
Sounds great, Lou. Hey, thank you very much for your expertise.
My pleasure. I appreciate you calling this morning.
Welcome back to the Mr. Fix-It Show. Lou Manfredini here with you. Good Saturday morning to you all.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. John Williams coming up at 10 o'clock. Hey, before Domati and Sam, you step away, do either one of you have a significant big birthday coming up soon?
I don't. My birthday's in June.
Mine's in March.
Right, but no big number, right?
Nah, not the golden birthday or anything coming up now.
No, I'm turning... Domati, you're not 30 yet, right?
Not yet. I'm 27. Well, how old am I? I'm 28.
All right.
I'm getting old. I'm getting up. Jesus
All
Christ.
Right.
I'm getting up.
Sam?
Lulu?
How old are you?
28.
Oh, both of you. So you're around your same age. Okay. I want you to go to my Facebook page because for your 30th birthday party, you're going to rent what I'm going to talk about right now. Now, you know that the kids, when they have birthday parties, they rent the bouncy house, they put in the backyard so the kids can bounce around, and you've been to that, right?
Yeah,
you've been to the festivals, and that's kind of fun when you were a kid, right? There's a company now that is selling and renting an inflatable Irish pub.
What?
Yeah. There's a picture of it on my Facebook page.
I'm in.
It is a giant inflatable Irish pub that you can put in your backyard that'll hold up to 50 people. And some rental houses where you can rent this thing will come in and they'll stock it with a complete bar and everything inside of there so you can rent the whole thing. Holds up to 55 people. You stick it in your backyard and you have your own Irish pub.
I am looking at it right now.
This is it the coolest thing you've ever seen?
It doesn't have to be my birthday to order this.
No,
this is Tuesday.
It does not. No. This is Tuesday. It looks like when it's inflated, it has a Lannan stone front with a couple of windows and two gable ends, a brick roof. The sign that inflates over the top says The Pub, and there's even a roll-down door on the front of it, and it's literally an inflatable Irish pub for the backyard. This is genius. Absolute genius. I saw it on NBC New York on their Twitter feed, and I thought it was the funniest thing I ever saw. So
now, what's the price for something like this, Lou?
I don't know. They were very
priceless.
Yeah, right. Right. Exactly. They were very elusive as to the price, but you can put that in your backyard and have the ultimate party back there. Well, you could do it anywhere. I mean, imagine if you went to went to the forest preserve or whatever. You brought a little generator and pumped this thing up. How fun is that? It's the coolest thing you ever want to see. If you go to my Facebook page, you can see it right there—an inflatable Irish pub.
I think, Lou, last year you made me get in that adult stroller. Remember that?
Right.
I think you should bring the pub to the station.
Put it right on Pioneer Court, and we could do our broadcast from it.
That would be perfect.
That'd be awesome.
All right. I'll call my people. Wait, I don't have any people. I'll call. All right. Let's literally switch gears. Coming up, for those of you that listen to the show all the time, you know that if I was not the handy guy around the house, I would be Mr. Carr. And there's probably not a day that goes by that I don't look at classic cars online of all the different cars that I want to buy. And I drive my wife absolutely crazy because I will send her a link. I'm like, oh my gosh, look at this cool truck. Or oh my gosh, look at this cool car. And her response is pretty consistent for 27 years later in marriage, which is stop bothering me. And I say, hey, I could be looking at a lot of other things online that, would be worse than this. I'm just looking at all these cars. And I have, owned a couple over the years and currently don't have one in my collection or stable, whatever it may be. But if you're a fan of classic cars, muscle cars, or any kind of cars, trucks, whatever, coming up is the Mecum Auctions, which is going to be happening in Schaumburg. And joining us on the phone line right now is Dave Majors, who is the CEO of Mecum Auctions. Dave, good morning.
Good morning, Lou, and I've already decided I'm going to get you a bitter badge.
but here's the problem is, I understand, and that's so nice of you, but this kind of, Dave, goes to my whole thing where, I really, I have this aspiration to go into politics, and I really do have this, but my wife has no aspirations for me to go into politics. And so she constantly tells me that, look, when you want to become the mayor of Chicago, that's great. You can do that with your second wife. And the problem is I'm still in love with my first wife. And if I go to your auction and I come back with a car, well, then I might as well drive it right to City Hall and say I'm going to run for mayor. But before I let you speak, I want to tell the listeners about my experience. Last year was the very first time in my life that I had toured an auction, an automobile auction that you guys were hosting in Schaumburg. I'd never been to one by anybody. I know there's lots of people to do it. And to say that I was impressed and or had a smile on my face ear to ear would be a complete understatement. I mean, you guys have been doing this a long time, and you are a Midwest company.
Yeah, and you know, the strange thing is they call this work. we're actually based out of Walworth, Wisconsin, which is the west end of Geneva Lake. And I actually live, I appreciated the Cubs conversations, I live about 10 blocks from Wrigley.
Oh, that's so great.
I'm obviously a Cubs fan, and I say we just call it for the Cubs right now. Who cares what the
just give them the number. We don't care what the number is. That's it.
Yeah.
Right.
It's over.
You guys are hosting an auction October 5th through the 7th at the Renaissance Schaumburg Convention Center. It's estimated you're going to have about 1,000 muscle cars and Corvettes and hot rods and resto mods and more are going to be crossing the auction block. And it's the 30th anniversary of your company, which started back in 1988. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, we're really excited about this year and excited about coming back to Chicago. Chicago is kind of a home game for us since we're based so close to Chicago, so it's always exciting, and all of our home office employees get to come. And this will be the 12th stop in our 2017 tour. We have two to go after Chicago, Las Vegas and Kansas City, and in those 14 stops, we'll take about 15,000 cars at a collective value of around $500 million to auction.
Wow.
And 1,000 of those beautiful cars are coming to Chicago the 5th, 6th, and 7th of October.
Tell me a little bit about, how this works. In other words, and I was really intrigued by the whole thing. And I mean, I know that these auctions are also, you have a broadcast deal with NBCSN, right? So people can actually watch the auction on television, and then if they wanted to, I think they can even participate bidding that way. Is that correct?
Yeah, you can actually bid on the phone, you can bid on the internet, or obviously you can bid live and in person at the auction, which is much more fun because it is loud and exciting and a lot of fun to be here. But we give you opportunities to participate if you just can't make it to our auctions.
And people like these cars that you will be auctioning off are for the most part, or I guess primarily, are owned by either individuals or perhaps small companies that bring their cars there all cleaned up and shiny and whatever, and people get a chance to see the cars before they go on the auction block, correct?
Yeah, these are all they're all consigned vehicles. So we're a little bit unique as an auction company in that instead of having an auction in one place every time, same time, same place every year,
right,
we actually travel the country. We come to you. So most of the cars, when we come to an auction like Chicago, will be within a 5 to 6 hour radius of Chicago.
Interesting.
So they're relatively local. We open up the consignments about 6 weeks, 8 weeks in advance of an auction, and those people that are close to Chicago that have a collector car they want to sell will call us up and we'll advise them on value and where to put it in the auction, how to bring it to the auction, how to clean it up, pretty much everything you can think of.
And, I mean, that experience obviously must be so valuable, in particular to probably to the first-time person that maybe had a car or has never done this before, to really understand how it all works.
Yeah, and for the first time buyer, as you mentioned earlier, the cars are accessible. This isn't like coming to a museum and, stay behind the ropes and look at the cars and then see if you want to buy one. You can look at the cars. They're all on display. You can open the door. You can sit in it. You can start it up, hear it run. You can do all of your due diligence before it crosses the block so that you're comfortable that that's the vehicle that you're looking for.
One of the things that I found very interesting, I was when I was there last year, I had a chance to walk. You guys, obviously the auction takes place inside the convention center, but you literally set up a bunch of tents outside where kind of a holding area for these cars where people can, as you mentioned, walk around and look at them and whatever. And I was looking at a couple of these cars, and a couple of them were just really nice. I remember specifically looking at a... It was like, I'm going to say like a 67 Caprice wagon. Okay. So, but it was kind of a little kind of a souped up car. And on it, it said, you know, over $67,000 worth of improvements. And it was a nice looking wagon, right? And then it said no reserve. And I thought to myself, well, that doesn't make any sense to me. Why would somebody say that I'm spending all this, you know, I spent all this money on this car, but basically, you know, you guys are obviously going to negotiate with the owner about what you're going to start the bid at, but it isn't like, hey, I got to get at least $67,000 or $50,000 for this car or I won't sell it. And it was explained to me that a lot of times you get cars where maybe it was dad or grandpa's car, and sadly, they're not around anymore, and the family has this car, and like, you know, we just want to get rid of it and do whatever. You can really get some really good buys. I mean, not that I'm saying that like you're taking advantage of the death of somebody, but in other words, I think the misconception is I can only go to this auction if I have a lot of money.
Well, there's a couple of things in that, and first of all, you're a car guy. You'll get it that this is a hobby or a sport, whatever you want to call it, a passion, not necessarily a finance. So,
right.
You know, people that restore cars fully understand that they're going to put more money in that car restoring it than they're ever going to get back when they sell the car, but that's not really their intention. You know, they're not doing it for profit. They're doing it because they just love to restore cars, and they get it done, and, okay, it's time to sell that one and
do another
money and buy a new one and start all over again. So,
right. But, you love those people.
Well, I just love the people that are passionate about car collecting and collector cars in general. It's just a great group, and they'll, you know, everybody wants to stand around and talk about their car. So it's, when we come to an auction, we're in Louisville, Kentucky right now at auction, and it's great just to stand and talk with people for 30 minutes about all of their cars. But the,
all right,
you're talking about that family thing. We've had a couple of really interesting examples of that. One that I remember in particular from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania last year, where a gentleman came to buy, he was 70 years old, came to buy the car from the 1950s that was the first new car that his father ever bought. And he said, my father brought it home, put my two brothers and I in the back seat, taking us to get milkshakes, and I immediately spilled my milkshake in the back seat.
Oh, man.
And I said, so you're coming to get a car just like that because of the memory? And he said, no. That car that's out there is the very car, and it still has the stain in the back seat.
Wow.
And buying it for Father's Day.
Wow.
He had to buy that car back and give it back to his father for Father's Day because it was the first new car his father had ever bought.
Those
are the kinds of things I love about car collecting. Because you have thousands of those kinds of stories.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. All right.
For that car we wanted in high school.
Yeah. Right. So the specifics is the Mecum Chicago 2017 is open to buyers and sellers and spectators. Bidder registration is available online and advance for $100, $200 after the auction starts. And it includes admission for two to the three-day auction. General admission tickets are available in advance online for $20 a person per day and for $30 at the door and online once the auction begins. Children 12 and younger receive complimentary admission. And, oh, by the way, Chicago Blackhawks Day is on Friday, October 6th, with $10 off spectator tickets and $100 off bidder registrations for persons that wear a Blackhawks hat and or T-shirt to the auction. You can see all the vehicles consigned and for more details at mecum.com. That's mecum.com. This is going to be a fun event, and I'm looking.
One thing, if I could.
Yes, sir.
I talked to my friend Jim Cornelison last night, who sings the national anthem for the Chicago Blackhawks, and he's agreed to come that Friday and sing the national anthem to open Mecum Auctions on Friday, and he'll be around for pictures and autographs with his championship Stanley Cup rings.
That's awesome. Dave Majors is the CEO of Mecum Auctions, and he'll be there this that coming weekend as well. And I hope to see you there as well. Thanks so much for taking the time this morning, and good luck down in you're in Kentucky?
Yeah, we're in Kentucky this weekend.
That's great. Good luck this weekend, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Look forward to seeing you then.
Take care. That's so much fun. That is so much fun. Oh, my gosh. I would just absolutely love to drive away with a car. I don't know what's going to happen, but I would love to do it. All right, let's get a quick call in before we have to break for news. Let's talk to Roy in, Wayne in Yorkville. Wayne, you're on WGN. Good morning.
Good morning.
How can I help you, sir?
Oh, everybody knows me, says I'm beyond help, but I could use some assistance.
Well, it's so funny. It's somebody just told me that, but I took your call anyway.
I kind of screwed up, and I need your advice.
All right.
I noticed that I have vinyl siding on one section of my house. I also have shutters, and I noticed about, less than 100 yellow jackets looked like they were building a nest between the shutters and the vinyl siding.
Okay.
I took, and like a good boy, I took the wasp parade that shoots 20 feet and tried to kill some of them. And what I basically wound up doing was killing some wasps, but more important, discoloring or staining my vinyl siding. Because I was stupid enough not to read the super fine print on the back of the can where it says don't use on vinyl siding. Any idea what I can do to try and restore? I mean, it didn't physically...
It didn't physically change it. Okay, and what color is that siding now?
It's a beige siding.
Okay, and are the wasps gone?
Yeah, as far as I know.
All right. Here's what I want you to try. I want you to get a product called Concrobium Mold Stain Eraser.
Holy cow. Hang on just a second.
I knew you were going to need that. Concrobium. You got a pen?
Hang on just a second. We're getting it now.
Okay.
She's ready?
Yep.
All right.
The boss is ready?
Yeah, you got that.
C-O-N-C-R-O-B-I-U-M. Concrobium Mold Stain Eraser.
Obviously available at Ace Hardware.
Of course it is. And you're going to buy that. It looks like a giant vitamin bottle. You're going to mix that with warm water, and you're going to follow the directions, the super fine print that you didn't watch the first time. Boy, are you in trouble. And then you're going to mix it in a bucket, and then you're going to take a sponge, and you're going to put it on the vinyl siding, and you're going to work it back and forth, wear some gloves with it, and that should take care of the problem for you.
Dynamite. Now, if it, in effect, has a cleaning effect,
It does, and it'll work its way in. And if that doesn't clean it, my friend, unfortunately, you're stuck.
Okay. Well, my other question is if that comes out real clean and looking good, then do I have to do the it'll be different color than the rest of the house? Obviously,
it'll be cleaner.
Yeah. So I would wind up having to do the whole side of that house of the house as well.
Perhaps.
Okay.
But did you study a little bit, like this is a little bit like Pandora's box, right? You open it up and all the bad stuff comes out. But you know what's at the bottom of Pandora's box?
No. Is it a mad house?
No, it's hope. It's hope. That's what's at the bottom. So you just keep cleaning, and what you're gonna hope for is that it works.
All right.
Good luck, sir.
Thank you very much, sir.
Appreciate you calling this morning. Hey, I really do appreciate you calling. That's a beautiful name, Myrna. I love that.
I love you, Lou.
I love you, Myrna.
I love you more.
He's more than just a pretty face. Now back to Lou Manfredini on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. When I need you more
I love all of you. Thank you for listening to the Mr. Fix-It Show on Saturday mornings. This hour of the Mr. Fix-It Show is sponsored by Ace Hardware and by wetandforget.com. You know what I forgot to tell everybody was I have this four-pack to give away, a VIP pack to the Mecum Chicago 2017 auction on October 5th through the 7th at the Renaissance Schaumburg Convention Center. The VIP pack includes four admissions for all four auction days preview tour of the Mecum Chicago auction on October 4th, and the merchandise and the world leader to live auctions, collector classic cars. It's great. There's details at WGNradio.com/events. So I've got this VIP pack for four, which includes admissions, the preview tour as well, and the merchandise for four. So how about this? 312-591-5000. What is our contest line? Anyone? Bueller? 591-312.
Is it 591-7000? Isn't it 591-7000?
Yeah, it's still that, right?
I think so. I know it's not 1-800-97-JENNY. I can tell you that. It's. I think it's 591-7000.
Yeah, that's our contest line. Otherwise, you'll jam up the lines. In a seventh caller that calls 312-591-7000 will get those the VIP packs, courtesy of our friends at Mecum Auto. That'll be a lot of fun. You can get there. Walk in for free. That's not a bad deal as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. And so we're going to go back to your phone lines right now. And hanging on the line is Kathy in Roselle. Kathy, you're on WGN. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Lou. I have a toilet question for you.
All right.
I notice periodically, not after flushing, but just out of the sky blue, I will hear like a kind of like a cycle thing going through one of my toilets, and then it stops and everything is fine. I was just curious if that was anything to be concerned about.
Well, it is in the standpoint of you don't want to waste the water, right? And, I mean, that'll end up costing you money long-term over, you know, a 12-month period of time. The first thing I want you to check is take the lid off the toilet and look, pay attention to the water level that's in the toilet. And there's an overflow, you know, in the toilet there.
Uh-huh.
The water level in that toilet should be about a half an inch to an inch below that pipe.
Okay.
And if you notice that it's hanging around right at the edge, you know, just kind of flushing around in there, that could be what you're hearing is the water sloshing around literally from people walking around.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
And so you need to adjust the float, the fill valve,
mm-hmm.
which depending on what you have, whether it's a ball or there might be a screw, to lower that water level. Now, if you open it up and say, well, you know, it's exactly what Lou said. It's a half an inch, 1 inch below the tube. That might not be it. You may need a new flapper.
Okay.
So the flappers, over time, sitting in that water, can become deformed. And while they'll seal, they sometimes can become a little misshapen over time, and you'll get a little bit of same thing. I'm walking around, and the water sloshes around a little bit, and the seal isn't as tight, and it lets a little water in, and then you hear it go down there. You can buy a really good flapper. One of the, they're made out of Burlington, Wisconsin, is the Corky brand with a K, and they make universal flappers. Super easy to swap out. Pop the old one off. Put the new one on, connect the chain. You're going to spend like $6 on it, and you're done.
You can get it at Ace?
Of course you can.
Corky flapper. Okay. But other than the money, or excuse me, the water issue, it's not any problem like with the toilet going or any, I mean, you know, going bad or anything like that.
No. No.
Okay.
No.
All right, Lou, thanks again for your good hint. It was
You got it. Thanks.
It was worth the 45-minute wait.
Hey, you know what? I'm going to put you on hold again because you know what? I'm going to send you an app gift card. How about that? Pleasing people since 1929. Hang on a second. Yeah, hang on a second. We'll send it's a $50 value from our friends at Apt. So hang on. We'll get that information from you. Let's go to Jim, who's in Princeton. Jim, you're on WGN. Good morning.
Good morning, Lou.
How can I help you, sir?
Well, we're in the process of downsizing from a four-bedroom house, two-story, to a condo.
Where am I going to sleep when I come to visit?
That's what I'm worried about. We got an unfinished basement that we want to do, probably economically. We've never had a basement done before, so
okay.
I'm just wondering what tips you can give me to look out for when the contractor comes in and things like that.
Well, I mean, you know, look, there's a bunch of different things you can do. Now, there are some companies out there that have this basement finishing system where instead of framing out the walls and stuff, they literally put these metal tracks. And they put these wall panels. They're four-foot wall panels that are insulated, and they fit in between these tracks. And the argument is that it's a cheaper way to go, but I've seen the price point there be pretty close. And then you throw in a drop ceiling and you go to town, right?
Yeah.
The one thing I would, so that's one method, right? These basement finishing systems. And I would definitely get an estimate from these guys just to see what it's all about.
Okay.
Now the traditional method is they come in, they frame a wall around the perimeter of the basement, right?
Yeah.
For me,
yeah.
I kind of like that scenario. You pull that wall in a couple inches from the concrete. You leave an airspace behind that wall.
Mm-hmm.
You insulate with traditional, you know, craft face insulation on the with a paper, you know, towards the warm side. You do a little electrical work. The biggest thing I'll tell you that's an issue when you're doing a basement is the comfort level that's down there. Okay.
Yeah.
I assume the you said you're downsizing to a condo, but the condo has a basement?
Yes, it does. It's one
it's
of
a
the
townhouse?
Things I liked about it.
Is it
no,
a townhouse?
No, it's a condo, one-story, two-bedroom with a basement.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, why we got it.
What is the heating and cooling? Is it forced air?
Yeah, gas, forced air.
Forced air, okay.
Yeah,
well, I guarantee you it's going to be colder down there in the winter. So mm-hmm. you got a couple ways to go. One is... you could work with the with a HVAC contractor to see if it's possible for you to put a zone, a separate zone, from your furnace. Is the furnace in the basement?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Right in the center.
All right, so they may be able to run a second zone off of the system with a little bit of work on the plenum, and you do your own thermostat down there. So you can control the temperature separately from upstairs. Because
mm-hmm.
it's going to be freezing down there in the summer when you're running the AC, and it's going to be cold down there in the winter because the thermostat's upstairs.
Yes.
If you don't want to do that, or if they say, geez, you know, it's going to be whatever, you know, $5,000 to do that, then you may want to do just a separate heating and cooling system down there, like one of these ductless systems, what they call these split systems.
Okay.
They got this heating and cooling, it's a heat pump, but it's also an AC unit. They'll put a separate condensing unit outside.
Yeah.
And it will heat and cool that space separately and do a really nice job. Now, are you going to put any plumbing down there?
There is plumbing down there.
For a bathroom?
No, I don't think we will. I think it's basically entertainment with a TV area, that sort of thing, and a bar.
Who are you gonna entertain down there?
Friends and family.
Yeah, I mean, if you're gonna do this basement from an added value proposition and ease of use,
yeah.
I mean, no offense, but you're down there, Jim, having a Pabst Blue Ribbon and maybe a couple, and now you got to go to the bathroom. You got to go upstairs.
Okay, good.
You know what I mean? So,
yes.
I mean, if the budget allows it, when you're downsizing and doing whatever. And you can add something in, and if whether it's an ejector, whatever, I would really highly recommend trying to get a bathroom in there.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
And have that part of the conversation with the contractors so mm-hmm. that at least you know what you're going to do. I mean, you're going to benefit from it. You're going to benefit from it while you're using it, and you're going to benefit from it when you go to sell. No question
yeah.
about it.
Yeah.
So okay. Give that a shot.
Okay, thanks. It's
good luck.
Helpful. Thanks,
good
man.
Luck. I hope the project goes well. Congratulations on your downsizing. We are live in New York this morning. Hi, everybody. Lou Manfredini here, the Mr. Fix-It Show. The
good folks at WABC kind enough to let us use their studios. Coming back to you this morning, we were in town visiting our daughter Carmen, who, for those that may remember, I don't know if Domati's ever heard this story, maybe Sam as well, but I was on the radio on a Saturday, or supposed to be on the radio on a Saturday, when Carmen was born with Roy Leonard. And I had to miss the show because I was in at Northwestern with my wife as she was delivering Carmen. And so I missed my show because of her birth, and now she's 21 years old. That's crazy. Oh, my gosh. Just absolutely crazy. And we're walking around New York City with her yesterday, and she walks around this town like she owns the place in three-inch heels, and the girl is 6 feet tall.
Which borough is she in?
She goes to NYU, so she lives in literally across the street from Union Square Park.
Wow.
So she's in Manhattan.
Cool.
Yeah, and
she's taking over Manhattan already.
She is taking over Manhattan. Let me tell you, it's something else. So it is something else. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Let's get back to your phone lines right now. We have Larry on the line. Larry, you're on WGN. Good morning.
Good morning, Lou. How are you today?
Good. How can I help you?
I saw on TV that they have these grab bars that you can hold on with suction cups. Do you think they're safe enough?
My personal opinion is no.
Okay.
And here's why. I've seen these things and I've tried these things, and when you first put them on, they are strong. I mean, no doubt. I can put these on if they're on the right kind of tile, it's nice and flat, and you put on there, I can hang on these things and it's fine. But over time, moisture or movement or a little bit of air gets underneath there, and while it still may be a firm, my worry with these things is that you're in it and all of a sudden you need it and you go to trust it and it pulls out of the wall.
I won't trust, right. Yeah.
Right? And that's the thing is when you first put it on and you're hanging on and you're like, look at this thing, it's fantastic. Long term, I just worry that it's not strong enough. So for me, I mean, is this for you that you want to put these on?
Yeah, it's not for me, but we have Italian tile and it is not smooth.
Right. Well, then it's definitely not going to work.
Definitely not.
So what I would do is, you know, you can buy the stainless steel grab bars and they're set up for, you know, 16 inch on center.
Right.
You need to find that stud. Okay. And if you use a, deep scan stud finder, or actually,
we have one. Yeah.
You do. Okay. But the other thing, too, that you could do, we've talked about this. There's a product out there called, what kind of, do you have a cell phone, Larry?
I do.
What do you have? Is it an Android or an iPhone?
It's an iPhone 7.
Okay. There's a company, an Israeli company, that has this product called the Wallabot. Okay?
And
this product, hear me out, this product is, it's about the size of your cell phone. You plug it into your cell phone, and you put this on the back of it. There's like a little plug. You plug it in. And right now, I think the only one they have currently is for an Android phone, but I know they're coming out one with an iPhone. It is an X-ray machine for your wall.
Wow.
Okay, now here, they use, I just found this out. The chip that they use is a similar chip that they use in mammography when they're doing mammograms on women, you know, for breast cancer.
Gotcha.
And this thing I can hold up on the wall. It will show you a gas pipe, a stud, and the exact location, like you're looking into the wall through your cell phone.
That's terrific.
It's like $200, but it's a lot less money than that Italian marble you got on that wall.
Boy, you ain't kidding.
Uh-huh. So, actually, Ace, you can order it through your Ace hardware store.
Oh, okay, great.
So you got to talk to them. It's called Wallabot. Wallabot.
Okay.
All right. And you may want to do that. And then get the stainless steel grab bars. Screw them in there with good stainless steel screws. Caulk it. The caps go over the top of it.
And that way you can really depend on that grab bar when you need it.
Wow, thank you so much. Years ago, my wife called with a problem, and you sent her a Rock On T-shirt.
Yeah.
She wears it every Saturday.
I love your wife. I love your wife, Larry.
And yeah, that's what she told me. And you also called her Kitten, so on Saturdays I have to call her Kitten. Otherwise,
there you go. Well, I don't know what else I have to do to help you be successful, Larry. Have a great day. I appreciate you calling.
Hey, I just met you. This is
crazy. But here's my number. So text me, maybe. Time for Just Text Me on the Mr. Fix-It Show. That's right, 720 WGN. So text me, maybe.
Yeah, it's time for our Just Text Me segment. We get lots of text messages throughout the day. And as I mentioned earlier, Lindsay's off today. And there's Cassara who's sitting in. Hi, Cassara.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you? Cassara's been texting me all morning.
Yes, I have been. My phone's working today, so it's been
exactly.
Great.
Exactly. That's perfect. What do you got for us today?
Okay. So I want to sand and stain my deck. Am I too late in the year? The deck is located on the west side of the house, so it doesn't get any sun until about 11 a.m.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not too late at all. Actually, my preferred time of year for doing the deck is the fall because the temperatures are a little bit... I mean, today's a bad example, but the lower temperatures are better because it slows down the curing process for the stain. So... do a little pressure washing. If you don't want to pressure wash, they're one of my favorite product lines is from Pennafin. They make this terrific Pro Tech cleaner that you can use to clean your deck. Even though they claim that you can, you don't have to sand, I'm a big proponent of sanding. So I would clean the deck, make any repairs that you have to make, do a little light sanding to open up the fibers of the wood, and then use their oil-based stain. Make sure it's not going to rain for 24 hours afterwards, but, you know, you can go all the way to, gosh, even November, as far as I'm concerned, to do the deck. The wood will accept it, and this is a great time to do it.
I had a new asphalt driveway installed on August 10th of this year. The contractor suggested I should have it sealed next month in October. Everything I read, however, suggests waiting 6 months to a year before sealing it. Any advice or thoughts?
The kind of rule of thumb when it comes to asphalt driveways is once it starts to gray is when you seal it. Well, right now, the fact that it's you just had it done, it's probably really, you know, kind of black, a vibrant black color. Once it grays, which takes a little bit of time, then you go ahead and seal it. The timing of it isn't great. I mean, I think you get through winter. If you're going to use ice melt on it, just make sure that, you know, if you get piles of it somewhere, you just brush it off with a broom, you know, a little bit. But I would probably do it early spring and not do it now. The problem you have is that the oils that are in the asphalt when they put it down there, the residue that's there is pretty, you know, consistent and strong. And you put the sealers on, which are water-based, you need most of that oil to be cured really well before you put the sealer on so it bonds well. That's the reason why I would wait.
All right. Someone would just like to know what your thoughts on for cement versus aggregate.
Exposed aggregate. Well, I think exposed aggregate is beautiful. It costs more. It's a really good look. You do have to be a little bit careful with it as to using ice melt products and... if it cracks down the line, because it literally is just like concrete, you're just seeing the pebbles on the top with an exposed aggregate. It's a finishing process that they do to make it look like that. With concrete, you have the traditional capabilities of all the concrete and how it looks, and if there's ever a problem and you had to cut something out and patch it in, that would be easier. But two very different looks that you gain. If you're going to spend the money on exposed aggregate, I think that I would probably rather see you do a paver system because you're going to be right around the same cost, and a paver system is more forgiving, that if an area were to sink or There'd be some kind of damage to it. You could take up a few of the bricks and reset them or even replace them, and it would be a much easier thing to fix down the line than an exposed aggregate material on the outside.
You want to do a couple more?
Sure.
Awesome. I have the sticky residue from felt pad floor protectors on my hardwood floors. I used vinegar to remove the residue, but it did not work. Do you have any suggestions?
Yes. Why don't you try my new favorite product in the world called Superzilla? It's a lubricant and a cleaner. Spray a little bit on there. Let it sit there for, 5 minutes. And then take a microfiber cloth and wipe it away. And then after that, take a little mild cleaner, even just dish soap and warm water with that same microfiber. Squeeze it out, wipe it away, and it should clean up and look just fine.
What is the best recommendations you have for a chipmunk repellent?
So chipmunk repellent, I talked about this earlier this morning. Actually, I talked about this on my New York show. The Bonide Molmax Sonic Spike. You find it at Ace, put a couple batteries in it, pound it into the ground. It makes the sound of a distressed rodent, and it freaks everybody out, and they leave. It has a 30-foot range, and it's the best $15 you're going to spend.
When it comes to roofing for homes, do you prefer metal or something else? And what is the cost difference when it comes to having metal roofs for homes?
I love metal roofs, and if you've got nothing but money, it's the way to go. It's definitely more expensive. A metal roof starts at about $700 a square installed, which is a 10-foot by 10-foot area. If you're doing a traditional asphalt shingle, you're going to spend about $350 to start for a 10-foot by 10-foot square. But the thing with the metal roof is the average life of a conventional roof in the United States is about 13 years. The average life of a metal roof is like 100. So, if you're planning on living a really long time, it's the way to go. But it does cost more. It does also change the architectural look of your home. So that's something you have to take into consideration as well. Meaning that, it's definitely going to change the look in a positive way. Don't get me wrong. But it's going to be part of the home's look for a very, very long time. I really like it if you can afford it, for sure.
All right, last one.
Last one.
I have two fireplaces that are never used, and I have three chimneys. Two for the fireplace and a separate one for the furnace / water heater. Is it safe for me to cover the other two?
Well, you could cover them in the sense that I would cover them in a way that the cover could be taken off, because someday when you go to sell that house, those fireplaces would be a selling proposition, and you don't want to do it in such a manner that says, oh, those fireplaces, you can't use them because I covered the chimney, because that'll come back to bite you in the you-know-what. If you want to do some type of metal cap that is removable, sure, but make sure you don't do anything to change the overall function of the fireplace so that you can still use them. That's our Just Text Me segment. Nice job, Gash. Thanks so much. In Arlington Heights, that's where Cindy called in. Hi, Cindy. You're on WGN. Good morning.
Good morning, Lou. How are you?
I'm great. What's going on?
Quick question for you. What do you recommend in kitchen countertops? I thought I remember one time you were saying that granite's great, but there was something else out there that really is good.
Well, I love granite, but, the big, big trend right now is quartz. And I'll tell you from a personal thing going on right now, my wife and I are redoing our kitchen. And we are installing quartz countertops in our kitchen. It's beautiful. The one thing that I didn't like...
What is the cost?
Well, it's around the same as granite, okay? But here's the thing. When quartz first came out, the whole concept behind quartz is that it's non-porous, it's super durable. It's consistent in its durability, where with granite, because it's a natural stone, it's durable, but there can be some inconsistencies in the stone because it's a natural product. Now, if you choose the right stone, that's really a non-issue. But when quartz first came out, the look of it was very not utilitarian, but it was so consistent that you kind of looked at it and like, oh, I want something with a little more you know, natural fissures and something that doesn't look so manufactured. They figured that out with the colors and the look, and you really do get the best of both worlds. There's no ceiling, no nothing. So you're going to spend about the same amount. I still love the natural beauty of granite. Don't get me wrong. And there are some granites that you can't get a quartz that looks like that. So if you're looking for a specific, style or texture or something like that, then granite would be the way to go. But I would definitely tell you to look at quartz and see what they have to offer because it's beautiful.
Okay, great. Thank you. And good luck with your revival.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the phone call. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Ferguson for pushing the buttons and for Sam doing sports and for Domati on the news and Cassara for producing this morning. I really do appreciate it. And thank you also to my friends here at WABC in New York who set up the studio for me to use this morning. Bruce, who's the engineer over here, thank you so much for getting me all set up. Our last call is sponsored by Townstone Financial, and our last caller this morning is Drake. Drake, you're on WGN. Good morning.
Good morning, Lou. I have a wood garage built 1957. Kind of researching a little bit, it seems like it's the siding is referred to as Dutch lap siding, I believe.
Sure.
Pattern 105, if that's correct.
Yeah.
They said it was popular at that time frame, and it's pine also, I believe. And first of all, there's two questions in regards to it. That one, obtaining it, or is that something that I'm going to have custom made? It's not, you know, a historic garage or anything, but I like the wood and I'd like to put it back. And it seems like some of the people I've called in reference for doing work on it, that they're saying that this is difficult or cannot be obtained. And I'm hoping you can help me in that regard. And also you've got,
who are you talking to that says they can't find Dutch lap siding? That's
well,
crazy. You can buy vinyl Dutch lap siding.
I don't want vinyl though.
I understand. But in other words, yeah. It's made there, and you absolutely can get Dutch lap siding. That's a falsehood. Where do you live?
Franklin Park.
Okay, two places you can go. You can go either to Fox Home Center in Alsip, okay?
Okay.
And tell them you want Dutch lap siding. They'll find it for you.
Okay.
Or on the northwest side of the city, you can go to Harry's Lumber.
Harry's Lumber.
Yeah. And you say, I need some Dutch lap siding.
Been burned down a couple times?
They rebuilt it again.
Yeah, okay.
They're like the Energizer Bunny. They just won't go away.
All right. The second thing, then, in regards to that, I'm glad to hear that. Is you have kind of like different kind of influences. I have a little bit of, it's not a large job, I have framework, a little bit of carpentry, and the garage door track has to be reattached as well as the siding. Because it seems to be different
people.
And nobody, I shouldn't say that because that would mean I called everyone in the face of the earth, which I have not done.
Right, those are the same people said that Dutch lap siding doesn't exist.
Yes, siding people want to sell me vinyl siding, and then
right.
Garage people want to build me a new garage or put in a new door, and I can't get carpenters to come because they're too small a job in their eyes because it's like the overhead door on each side, the siding, as well as some of that woodwork has to be done, and then a little along the bottom on two other sides.
All right, you need two people, okay? You need a carpentry contractor, a small carpentry contractor that'll come in and do all that work, including the siding. And the place to go there is the NARI website, NARI.org, NARI, National Association of the Remodeling Industry. You'll find a carpentry contractor that can do the carpentry work and the siding for you. And then when that's all done, you need the garage door company, and there are plenty of garage door companies that will come out and do that repair work. They'll charge you for it, but they'll do it. The carpenters aren't going to touch the garage door when it comes to the springs and tracks, and that way it'll all get done. Two people. You may be able to find them both at the NARI website, and then you'll get it done. It'll look great, and you can absolutely find the Dutch lap siding. Then that's no question at all. Thanks so much for the phone call. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. I really do appreciate it.